And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 23rd, 2014. The head of the commission tasked with reviewing the constitution says the outcome of the Addis talks will affect the constitution of South Sudan.
If you take the agreement which has been arrived at with Mr. David Yao Yao, it has already impacted on the constitution.
And a top U.S. official confirms there is less fighting in South Sudan.
What we have seen is compared to prior to the May 9th agreement, the level of fighting between the two sides has indeed declined.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The chairperson of the South Sudan's National Constitution Review Commission says they will not meet the legally required deadline to present a new draft of the document. He says the ongoing fighting has made it impossible to conduct the government-mandated countrywide consultations. Mungome Davis Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
Chairperson Akolda Mantier spoke to the media after meeting with South Sudan's top negotiator at the ongoing peace talks in Addis Ababa, Nial Deng Nial. Tier says he encouraged Deng to reach a peace deal as soon as possible so his committee can get back to drafting a constitution.
It is preventing us from conducting seminars and workshops in the states as models of consultation with the ordinary people of South Sudan. We cannot do this because there is fighting going on. We now have about remaining 6 or 7 months. Is it possible to conduct civic education within this period? Knowing that there's fighting which is taking place, knowing that this is a rainy season, knowing that there is no money for civic education.
The country is operating under what has been called a transitional constitution. The commission was supposed to have prepared a draft of a new constitution by January of last year. They said they did not have enough funding to meet that deadline. Parliament then granted them an extension until the end of this year. But Nial says it is actually a good thing that the process has been halted, because the peace talks might have an impact on what is written in the final draft constitution.
It will be important that even in the next round of the talks, the CRC is given the opportunity by the mediators to bring everybody up to speed with what is going on.
Thierry says he wants to be brought up to speed when the talks resume again in June. He points to the recent agreement with former rebel leader David Yao Yao as an example of how such deals can influence the new constitution.
It is likely to impact on us in the way they will arrive at solutions, or what appear to be the solutions to the present crisis. If you take the agreement which has been arrived at with Mr. David Yao Yao, it has already impacted on the constitution.
Under the agreement with Yao Yao, the government will set up a new administrative area in Jonglei State to be headed by the former rebel leader. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Juba.
A top U.S. diplomat confirms that despite violations of the recent ceasefire agreement signed between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar, there is less fighting between the two sides. Speaking to reporters in a telephone news conference yesterday, U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Ambassador Donald Booth, said the agreement between Salva Kiir and Riek Machar has made a difference.
What we have seen is compared to prior to the May 9th agreement, the level of fighting between the two sides has indeed declined.
Booth called for a regional protection force to be deployed quickly to ensure the implementation of the peace agreement.
Key to achieving the real cessation of hostilities will be the deployment of monitors. There has been a monitoring and verification mission established by IGAD. Those monitors are now in the field in South Sudan. They had been put in the field to operate in a benign environment. Since that did not exist, they were constrained in what they could do.
He says the United Nations mission in South Sudan is working to provide security for the peace monitors so they can freely move around the country to verify reports of ceasefire violations by either side. Ambassador Booth says the U.S. government is working with IGAD to keep pressure on both parties to the conflict to respect the agreement they have signed. Asked whether he thinks a breakthrough has been achieved in the peace process, Booth sounded cautiously optimistic.
The process is underway now to give the monitoring and verification mechanism information that it needs to identify the disposition of the forces so that they can begin to work to ensure that the forces are separated. That was part of the agreement on May 9th as well, was the disengagement and separation of forces.
Ambassador Booth says the deployment of the IGAD Protection Force will pave way for the withdrawal of foreign forces from South Sudan. A group of more than 30 South Sudanese youth leaders gathered in Nairobi this week to talk about how they can help bring peace to their country. Organizers say their goal is to make young people more involved in helping guide their country into future, especially after the devastation caused by 5 months of fighting. Lucy Pony has the story for VOA from Nairobi.
SPARC, a Dutch non-governmental organization that focuses on youth empowerment, organized the workshop. Country manager Lawrence Savin says they want to encourage young people to think about critical issues like improving South Sudan's economy.
We are working with some of the people who can access decision makers, which are the youth leagues of parties, and working with them to try to help them formulate ideas on improving the socioeconomic position of youth so that they can inform their leaders who can advocate in government for improving young people's access to economic development.
Savin says if young people have jobs, they will be less eager to join in fighting. David Ali, an unemployed youth from Juba, says they also talked about ways to address ethnic divisions in the country.
Yes, for us as a youth, it is important that we unite, but we are not living isolated. We are living in the same society with our elders, with our leaders. And once they actually differ and cause chaos, like what is happening, the youth also take side. Like the youth, even in this workshop, they are divided. Some of them are affiliated to the opposition, others are affiliated to the government. How are we going to unite? First is that there should be a peace agreement reached so that it creates an environment, creates an atmosphere where people can now reconcile.
Several youth leaders from other countries also joined the discussion to lend their ideas to the South Sudanese. Vital Gatabazi, a civil society activist from Burundi, had this suggestion for South Sudan's young people.
Youth should first of all be represented in Addis, and be represented by youth, erected by youth itself. If not, it will never work.
Many of the South Sudanese attending the workshop said they planned to follow through on his advice. John Pendingong, a South Sudan civil society activist, says he believes the workshop helped young people create a united front.
We should also compete with the politicians in mobilizing youth for peace as they are mobilizing for war. So this is the right time actually to strike.
Participants agreed to come up with a charter outlining their goals and responsibilities as youth representatives when they returned to South Sudan. Youth have so far not been represented at the talks in Addis, which are on hold until later next month. Negotiators on both sides have shunned recommendations to expand the number of delegates at the table. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Good personal hygiene is important to protect you, your family, and your community. More than 5,000 children die every day from diarrhea and stomach disorders caused by the bacteria found in human waste. People get sick when these bacteria are spread from person to person on their hands or clothing. But there are things you can do to help stop the spread of infection. Try to relieve yourself far away from where you cook, eat, and store food. Wash your hands thoroughly with soap and water after using the latrine. And keep cuts and scrapes clean and covered until they're healed. It is important to you and your family to understand the threat of diseases that can be spread by human waste and avoid them by staying clean.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we hear what you have to say about humanitarian agencies' effort to reach those in need across South Sudan. Stay tuned.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think it helps children if their parents are very strict?
Yeah, it can be hell because some children, they are very careless. So it can be very good, it can be very important.
You know, sometimes if you are not very strict or if you are not very straightforward when you want to bring up your children, so your children will just go to street.
It is better also to control the children in the family so that you can take them to the school, so that you can buy for them what they want also in the family, and also showing them the traditional culture and showing them the life that they are burning for in the family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. I'm Gwen Utim. It's time for your comments. Several of you expressed your gratitude to humanitarian agencies and Western countries for their financial support to the South Sudanese people. Mario Gabriel Akun in Kwajuk Warup State says, "I want to thank the donor countries that came to the recent Oslo conference to show solidarity with South Sudan and pledged money to help the innocent war-affected civilians." Akun continues, "We the citizens are very proud of you. Your support shows us that countries all over the globe share in the pain we are undergoing at the moment." Mamer Akun Bol Ngogrial writes, "Congratulations to humanitarian agencies for their efforts to rescue the victims in war-affected areas of South Sudan. Bol urges parties in the conflict to not interrupt access to those who need humanitarian assistance." Robert Samuel from Yambio writes, "Our leaders should know that even people in the seven states where there is no fighting are suffering because there are no medicines in hospitals and there are no roads, or the roads are in poor state." He goes on, "If the fighting doesn't stop now, South Sudan will witness a disaster and famine before the end of this year." Samuel continues, "South Sudanese are crying for peace, but there is no one listening to them. We, the people of South Sudan, are like the biblical man who was coming from Jericho to Jerusalem and was beaten up by thieves along the way. We are like that man from Jericho who lay by the roadside and was only helped by a good Samaritan." James Manasseh, also from Yambio, writes, "Our leaders must negotiate to resolve their problems rather than go to war in the first place. Yao Yao is now in Juba while thousands lost their lives in his rebellion, which should have been avoided in the first place." Moses Edward from Nzara County, Western Equatoria State, writes, "For South Sudan to have peace, there is a need for IGAD countries to deploy troops in the country soon." He adds, "This will also prevent accusations and counter-accusations of ceasefire violations by either side of the conflict." In response to the cholera outbreak in South Sudan, Emmanuel Simon Kumbo writes, "We must keep our environment clean and maintain good standards of hygiene. We must especially ensure we take proper care of children at home so they don't contract cholera." And finally, Mario Gabriel Akun in Kwajuk again writes in, "Bravo to Dr. Riek Guy Kolk, South Sudan's health minister, for working hard to control the cholera outbreak in Juba." He continues, "I urge you to collaborate with international health agencies like MSF to curb the spread of the outbreak before it gets out of hand. We, the citizens, are totally confused about which death we shall run away from. Is it death from gunshots or death from diseases like cholera?" Thank you for your comments. We like to hear from you. You can reach us by text or on the web at southsudan@voanews.com. I'm Gwen Uten.
We read listener comments on Fridays. These comments come from you, our listeners, and they reflect the views of the commentator only. The comments do not represent the views of anyone on this program or the Voice of America. While an international agreement on climate change remains elusive, African nations are moving closer to a united strategy. Africa has experienced more extreme weather events in recent years as global temperature arises. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Dr. Joseph Mukabana says the continent is on the front lines of climate change. He says that has led to a draft version of what's called the Implementation Plan of the Integrated African Strategy on Meteorology.
Africa is the most vulnerable continent when it comes to climate change. Out of the 48 least developed countries, 33 are in Africa. So the priority in Africa is to adapt on climate change. You either adapt or die.
Mukabana is director of the Regional Office for Africa and Least Developed Countries of the World Meteorological Organization. He says climate events far from Africa are having an effect on the continent.
Ice in the polar regions are melting, so the sea rises up. And the small islands, of course, are in danger of submerging. And also the low-lying coastal zones are in problems. So it's estimated sometimes between 25 and 50 years, the low-lying coastal zones may be submerged and the inundation will cover areas that are now inhabited.
It's imperative, he says, to protect Africa's coastlines.
The land degradation at coastal zones also ensures that the coastal zone habitat is interfered with. For example, in some areas you have mangrove forests being cut, and yet mangrove forests were very good in conserving the environment at the coast. You have also the coral reefs being eroded, and yet the coral reef, if it is big enough, can form the first fence when tsunamis come, for example. So we are destroying the coastal zone, and that will impact on human beings also.
While rising seas pose one climate change-related problem, lack of rain in some regions poses another, frequent droughts.
We depend mostly on seasonal rains, which farmers use to plant food crops. And so with the droughts now, you don't have food, so you have famine, you have malnutrition. The pastures are not there, so you have communities quarreling over the pastures. Essentially, in countries, you have sometimes internal displacement because of drought. People looking for food, animals looking for pasture.
And ancient sources of fresh water may have little to offer today.
The glaciers on mountains like Mount Kilimanjaro are also disappearing very fast. And the rivers that were there, which were perennial, are now drying up.
And while some areas are drying up, others can get too wet from much heavier than normal rains.
So you have flood episodes, which are more frequent. And with the floods, of course, there is a destruction of life and also destruction of infrastructure, which happens very fast. So the economies are impacted that way.
To address the threat of climate change in Africa, the World Meteorological Organization and the African Union Commission called a meeting in Nairobi in 2010. Nearly 50 ministers from across the continent attended. The meeting led to the Nairobi Declaration. The document noted the increasing risks and threats to sustainable development associated with disasters. It went on to say that 90% of those disasters were due to or aggravated by meteorological or hydrological extreme events. The Nairobi Declaration also recognized that weather and climate information, services, and products are of key importance for supporting climate-sensitive social and economic development centers. Mukabana says another product of the 2010 meeting was the creation of the African Ministerial Conference on Meteorology, or AMCOMET.
AMCOMET was formed to be a high-level mechanism for development of meteorology and its application in Africa. So the ministers also demanded that an integrated African strategy on meteorology should be developed, and that was developed.
That strategy is a mix of modern technology and scientific data and traditional knowledge, such as which crops are resistant to drought. From May 26th through the 30th, some AMCOMET officials meet in Harare. They'll consider the draft strategy and set an agenda for a full meeting of the conference in October. Ministers say the goal is to develop a transformational approach to introduce innovative adaptation measures that build the resilience of communities to climate change. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Former Thai Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat arrived at a military installation in Bangkok today after she and dozens of political figures were summoned to a meeting with the country's ruling military. The military seized power in a bloodless coup yesterday, with General Prayuth Chan-o-cha saying the move was aimed at restoring order and pushing through political reform. The military has suspended the constitution, imposed a nationwide curfew from 10 p.m. until 5 a.m., and shut down several media outlets. A Syrian human rights group says that rebel fighters have shelled a campaign rally of supporters of President Bashar al-Assad in the southern city of Dara, killing 21 people. Government warplanes also launched multiple raids over the city. Amateur video shows Syrian government warplanes dropping barrel bombs over parts of the southern city of Dara. Today, the wave of air raids followed a rebel mortar attack on a campaign rally for supporters of President Assad in Dara last night. The government in Kiev has pledged to ensure that some voting in eastern Ukraine takes place in Sunday's presidential election. But with violence escalating and pro-Russian separatists vowing disruption, it's not clear how effective the authorities will be. For a second day, armed separatists and pro-unity forces clashed near the eastern city of Donetsk. This time, two pro-Russian insurgents died in a firefight with a non-government-sanctioned militia. Yesterday, separatists ambushed a Ukrainian National Guard checkpoint, killing 16 soldiers. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
In a continent of dramatically contrasting poverty and wealth, hair is a rare common denominator that cuts across class and cultural groups in Africa. The black hair business is worth billions worldwide, and the African market is slowly picking up as consumers look for the best product. Gillian Parker looks at the hair industry in South Africa and the lengths people go for sleek beauty and hair.
So what's in your hair now?
This is a weave.
This is a weave.
Two pieces here, you know, like extensions. Like that.
Good Hair, the 2009 documentary by comedian Chris Rock, spotlighted the business of black hair, particularly the use of relaxers, weaves and hair extensions. Elements of his documentary ring true in South Africa, the dominant market on the continent for hair care products. According to researchers, black women are willing to spend at least double the amount on hair and beauty products that white women do. According to estimates from Euromonitor International, in the Middle East and Africa hair care market alone was valued at $4.2 billion in 2013. Zinat Ibrahim is a senior analyst at Euromonitor. She sees huge potential for the hair care market in Africa.
Multinational players, for example, in various locations in Africa, are increasing their marketing and advertising budgets, and this is really influencing consumer choice. The likes of hair conditioning products, these products once again are increasingly appealing, especially because new product development with extra value is allowing consumers to have affordable and salon-like treatments at home.
Ibrahim says South Africa has the most established and developed market for these premium hair care products, which she says are gaining increased interest from consumers.
Come, I'm putting hair relaxer, then I'll wash for you.
For many, hair is one of the defining characteristics that African women use to transform their appearance. In Rita Danda's hair salon in downtown Johannesburg, rows of wigs and hair extensions mask the walls. Shelves under the mirrors are filled with gels, creams, mousses and hairspray. Her customers are not wealthy, but they are still prepared to pay a few dollars for the salon experience to get their hair done. Dipping her hand into a large white tub, Danta then smothers potent relaxer onto her customer's hair.
So after relaxing the hair, 1 week time or 2 weeks time, she needs to come and do treatment to protect the hair from breaking. And then when she finishes, she can decide to put a weave or braid or leave her hair like this. It's up to her.
Sodium hydroxide is the key ingredient used in relaxers and can smooth out even the toughest afro curls. But it burns the scalp if left on too long. Danta quickly moves to rinse the white cream off her customer's hair after she complains that her head is burning.
It's a bit hot. Let's say, like when you put a weave, once you are scratching, you are bringing salt in your scalp. So if you scratch too much and you do relax, you get burned. It's not bad. It grows the hair. And it makes the hair also to look nice.
Another popular practice is the application of hair extensions or weaves in which strands of hair are woven in. At Danta's salon, synthetic hair extensions cost $10. In Johannesburg, upmarket business district, prices range up to $800 for hair extensions. Donald Zabaroni has been a hairstylist for nearly 10 years. He says the improving quality of human hair extensions has driven demand, although for some women, the time and the potential pain is not worth it.
You got people in SA that prefers to be all African and natural. You understand? They don't go for weaves, they don't go for any other thing. Most of my clients used to have weaves, used to relax their hair. Then they realize, no, this is not for me. So with natural hair, you do your cornrows, you do anything with it. You want to rock up in an afro, you rock up in an afro.
Gillian Parker for VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Saida by JJD Muzika.
Evangelio Anna Maria Saida Malu Jede
Habibi Isimu Saida Isimu Sukeli Wawu Sajemi Hiya Jamani Gigeni Juba muhabatanina bada bitara
bada kanze milana sei
isimi seida isimi sukeli wa usa jemi hiya jamani gigeni juba muhabatanina bada bitara baha
koroji koromona fekiri ya jama juba
We have been listening to JJD Muzika with the song Saida. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a peaceful weekend. And be sure to tune in again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.